Yeah, welcome to Stop the Presses on this telltale date, especially here in the state of Texas, November 22nd. What does that date ring a bell about, huh? Well, there's small wonder there. Of course, this is the 58th anniversary, 58, of the JFK incident on Elm Street. That's what we're going to call it, the incident on Elm Street, November 22nd, 1963. And I am here with a longtime research partner, my guest today, Brian David Anderson, as announced on a RBN post, a press release I put up last night as a teaser. That's going to be up for a while here at republicbroadcasting.org in order to have something people can go to. It doesn't give away the store. It just kind of gives you a hint that we're going to talk about a completely different theory about what happened to JFK on that fateful day, that pivotal day. And it does give a web address about a documentary we're going to talk about that I helped our guest today research and put together, and an associated book. But without further ado, Brian David Anderson, originally from the Dallas area, a former Dallas Times Herald photographer. He's got deep roots in this thing. He lives in California now, and he's an alternative health guy. How you doing, Brian?
Oh, very good.
Great. Yes, it's an interesting topic, and piece by piece, inch by inch, we're going to dissect this thing and present, ladies and gentlemen, a completely different paradigm, in fact, a paradigm shift on the incident on Elm Street 58 years ago today. In fact, JFK would have allegedly died about an hour ago, Central Time. Anyway, Brian, you can sort of retrace the steps of how you and I got together and how we got into this in the first place. We'll kind of lay the context of how we met, how we got on the same page on this, the challenge you posed to me, and then for the rest of the show, we're going to show some important video footage and still frames, largely, if not completely, in the second half of the show after the bottom of the hour. That way the first half can be laying out the context and laying out the direction of this and covering as many of the key bullet points as we can. There's a very relatively fresh item, though, that we're going to show a video about, among other things, in the second half of the show today. And anyway, Brian, I recall being at a conference in Texas, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder and handed me a copy of a book called My God, I'm Hit, an earlier edition of it, and it was still in the shrink wrap, so I didn't open it right away. I get all the way back to South Texas, and I open it, and I start reading it, and I'm just going, huh? What? What is this thing saying? And at first I was not exactly in denial, but I was just intrigued. The way I was raised by my mom, the original conspiracy theorist, some call her, I didn't just reject it or dismiss it out of hand, but I was a little bewildered and quite intrigued by it, and I began to go through it, and I remember I finally gave you a call, and I was waffling on it, you know, running hot and cold, not exactly knowing what to believe, but being very intrigued by the thesis of it, which again results in something being something having happened that day of a completely different nature than what the few television networks who existed at that time, the growing mass media cartel, that, you know, it wasn't like people had cell phones with cameras everywhere. They had a very tight lock on the information for this thing. So they were able to give us one scenario when the reality was a completely different scenario. But Brian, why don't you take it from there, kind of recollect how we got together, and I'll kind of give you some counterpoint, and we'll go along that path.
Okay, first of all, a technical issue is that I don't see myself on the Skype. Is that something different? Because I don't see me on the Skype.
I don't believe that matters. I'm going to ask the engineer, Ron Avery. We are video simulcasting this at livestream.com/Ron Avery/stop the presses. Ron, does everything look okay?
He can be seen very well right next to you. That's what I'm seeing.
Okay, yeah. I'm seeing it with that. Okay, all right. Very good. It was now 58 years ago today. I was then in the fifth grade, And so 58 years ago now, I was listening to a radio program. They had, I went to a Catholic school, and then well, we heard during recess that the president had been shot. And so we were now listening to a local radio station, and they were describing and going on and on and on and on. So that's what I was doing 58 years ago. And it turns out then that I had all sorts of connections to the incident on that day. And it's just some very, very weird things. Just the simple thing is that here now they were doing the radio program, and they already came out on the radio program and said they now cornered the suspect at the theater, and they already had his name, Lee Harvey Oswald, and that he lived on West Fifth Street in Irving. Well, that was all very interesting because that's where I was living in Irving, Texas, going to St. Luke's School. And we lived, my house, family house was on West Fifth Street, but it was on a different type of, it was still a mile away from where he was, but that still, that was a connection. Immediately within an hour here, the assassin lives on our street, supposedly. And so then it went from there. There was lots of weird, weird connections over the years. I totally stayed away from the whole thing as far as investigating it, that type of thing. They came out with the Warren Commission book, and I was sitting there. I was in high school when they came out with the Warren Commission report, and I was sitting there with my mother, with my father, and my brother, and I just sort of thumbed through it, and I got kind of held it in my hand, and I said, "This is a bunch of lies," and you know, it's like half truths or something like that. I just had a really bad feeling about it. And they went all explosive. They all, oh, no, it can't be, you know. So then it was now the late 1990s. And I met a person by the name of Linda Goodman, and she was an astrologer, and she had published a lot of books. But before that time, she was a very well-known Hollywood reporter. And so she had all of these insights with a various lot of people. And we started talking about them this November 22nd. And she goes, "Well, you know, he really didn't die. He was shot in the shoulder." And I went, "Linda, you're crazy. What do you mean?" You know. And so that we talked about it a little bit. And then I put that in my, you know, back of my head. It always stayed there. Then it was about 2005. I said, "Okay, I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to make some sort of, you know, some investigations here. Maybe a lot of the stuff that had happened to me before, you know, can we put it in some sort of book form or at least a magazine article?" And that's when I came across the FBI report where Roy Kellerman made the report that he said that when he heard the first shot fired is that he turned around and he saw the president with his left hand going to his right shoulder. And then now I remember what Linda Goodman had said is that he was shot in the shoulder. And here Kellerman in his statement to the FBI 2 days after everything had happened, before the Warren Commission, here he's saying this. So my life was never the same after that. And so then I took the deep dive in, did the book, did the various things, and then the book got in your hands, and you contacted me. And so then it was now, what, 2007, that 2008, that we were actually on the RBN program here. It's hard to believe that that's now been 13 years ago. And we started talking there a little bit. And finally, at the end of the program, I think I had you so intrigued. I said, "Mark," I said, "just come join me and you know, prove it to yourself. And this, you know, come join me in this investigation." And I said that on the air. And you didn't give a reply. But then very soon afterwards, you gave me a private reply. And since that time, the collaboration has been just really, I think, fabulous. I mean, there's just so many things that you have done, Mark, that I've done. It's the mixture of the two. And I feel that we have come as close as it is to the reality that occurred 58 years ago, and 58 years and 2 hours ago. So... that's kind of like how the background of this program and how Mark and I came together was my experiences, but then also now the deep dive that we've taken, and we've spent money We have put a lot of time. We have put, where a lot of investigators, they just, investigate through the internet and they make, off the cuff type situations. And we have gotten down and we've talked with people. We have talked with people who are extremely important, interviewed them, and also bought materials, did various types of things. I think one of the key pivotal things that occurred, we'll go back to this, but you went to the school book depository and you saw the picture of JFK's jacket, which was Warren Commission Exhibit 303. And then I called up to the National Archives wanting to buy that, but I wanted the latest edition. And the lady kept going, said, you really want the Warren Commission picture. That's what you really, really want. I said, oh, well, because I really wanted the latest one. And she kept going and going on. And I ended up buying like $1,500 worth of pictures. They were really super high quality. That's why, because they came in a disc and super high quality. So I put my money where my mouth was. But then when I hung up from that call, I went, what was going on there? She kept guiding me. What she finally did, she said, I tell you what, and I bought all these pictures. She said, I'll throw the FBI photograph in for $100. And I said, okay, yeah. But then I hung up and I went, oh my God, what happened there? So the very first thing when that disc hit, I put that jacket on, blew it up, and then that just changed everything. So you found the jacket, I followed up. There's just been so many instances where we've done something and then we collaborate, and it's just been a really, really, it's been fun. It's been a pleasure to work with you over this last 13 years, Mark.
Yeah, it's involved a lot of adventures, ladies and gentlemen. Everything from taking our evidence to the Dallas DA of about 2010 or 11 at the time, Craig Watkins, because he was a reformer wanting to solve cold cases. We read about that, so we went there, and we had a compilation of evidence, the substance of which we'll get into as we go along on today's show. But we went there, and we talked, Brian and I talked to a detective with the Dallas County, and his first name was Rick. I don't remember his last name, but I have never seen in my life a look of incredulity like I saw on his face when he understood what we were saying about JFK, which will become clear as we talk. I also interviewed Jim Lavelle, who was the famous cop in the Stetson hat with the Dallas County Sheriffs that was connected to Oswald through handcuffs at the famous time of the so-called shooting of him by Ruby, another suspicious, largely fake event, I might add. And Dr. Robert McClellan, among the last of the Parkland doctors from that time to pass away. There's one younger one, Kenneth Salyers, who's still alive. He was really young at that time. He's still kicking. At any rate, I also interviewed Salyers as well as McClellan. And what Brian and I did, ladies and gentlemen, is we knew what they thought and believed, and we wanted to nail it down to make sure that everyone understood their point of view clearly. But we also wanted to bring what we knew to them and to see where there was corroboration. And what we found was,
Mark, if I can just intercede here, how we got to the doctors and why McClellan was open and why we got all this access to them is because we moved from the West Fifth Street house and we went over to Glen Valley in Irving. And two doors down was Charles Baxter. And Baxter was the one who worked on, he was the lead surgeon, and he cut down the bullet wound and put the trach in. And it was Dr. McClellan who held the forceps. And he was looking from the backside into JFK. So that was the introduction, is that how I got to McClellan is because of my connections to Baxter.
Right, who lived near you, right, at that time. Exactly. So we talked to people, ladies and gentlemen, who were in pivotal places physically. As Brian just mentioned, Dr. McClellan was behind the body in trauma room one at Parkland Hospital after the incident on Elm Street at the depository area, and saw that the back of the head of that body, that person had been blown out. So that was an exit wound. And Kenneth Sawyers, the youngest one, probably the only surviving Parkland doctor from that time, saw the entrance wound in the upper forehead area, smaller, of course. And Malcolm Perry at first, before they tried to muzzle him and get him to change his mind, also agreed, I believe, Brian, the lead surgeon, Malcolm Perry, also agreed that this was entrance and the other was exit. And the powers that be did not want that. But so we have a situation building where we have different evidence that we're taking.
That's also to get back to, I knew about Baxter also, because he was the one that did the trach. And he and Perry were working together.
Yes.
And Baxter plainly said it. He said this was a bullet entry wound. And then the FBI showed up at his door about a year later, and they had this altered Zapruder film, and they played it like 500 times trying to persuade him that that was not a bullet entry wound. But he held his ground. He's even all, you know, all the way through. He said, no, this was a bullet entry wound.
Right. And why there was also a wound here. Now we have to unravel the seeming complexities that are building in listeners' minds right now, live and on the archive. At any rate, so we'll show some still frames and probably a very important video again at the second half, but probably one of the most important things to get into, and assuming that we can go advertising free until the bottom of the hour. I'll wait for an answer on that. At any rate, the car is rolling down the street. Kennedy arrives in Dallas via Love Field. He had been in Fort Worth. And, of course, prior to that, he had been in San Antonio and Houston. And it's interesting to note, and it's instrumental to note, that the 100X black presidential limo that is so famous on the streets of Dallas on that pivotal day is not the car that was used most or all of the time prior to Dallas. They used a white car. And that, we contend, is because they had to make sure some modifications were in place on the black car, including an all-important secret compartment, the significance of which will manifest itself soon. But this car is rolling down the street there. It takes that sharp turn onto Elm Street off of Houston Street. It had come down from Maine. And after the first shot is fired, Kellerman hears JFK say what, Brian?
So the first shot was fired, and he heard the president say, "My God, I'm hit." And that is
right.
Now the title of everything, "My God, I'm hit."
And that's the title of the documentary that Brian, mostly Brian, but me, produced, the video documentary, as well as the associated book, "My God, I'm Hit, A Sherlock Holmes Approach to the Kennedy Incident on Elm Street." So I had seen this jacket, again, like you said, that what set this off, this picture in the Sixth Floor Museum, the former school book depository, in 2009, and I'm looking at the shoulder, and I'm thinking, what is that depression and that discoloration there? And that's when you spent the money later, soon after, on those photos at the College Park, Maryland National Archives. And so, at any rate, we'll be right back with more after this.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Yeah, from a little big horn to the Rio Grande, it seems we've seen the last lemonade stand. Well, all the flea markets and the paper routes.
And welcome to the next segment here on Stop the Presses, November 22, 2021. My guest, Brian David Anderson. He's an SEN, I'm an SON, no direct relation, but we've had the research relationship we've been talking about going back to 07-08, researching the Kennedy incident on Elm Street, the street theater that it turned out to be, not at all what we're told. We're going to outline what that is, why that is, how that is. And we've talked a little bit about Brian's connections in Dallas. Another thing, Brian, that's worth mentioning, the second half of the show we'll get into much more nitty-gritty details, is that you worked with none other than Bob Jackson at the Dallas Times-Herald, and you, in fact, were, for quite a while, a Dallas photojournalist. And so Bob Jackson, of course, is well-known for that famous photo I mentioned a few minutes ago of the Stetson hat-clad James Lavelle handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald, the most famous of those photos in the basement there, where Ruby apparently, allegedly plugged Oswald. Bob Jackson took that photo, and you worked and were trained by Bob Jackson. And I don't remember, Brian, real quickly, if you bounced much of your ideas of what evidently happened to JFK off of Bob Jackson. Did you bounce much of that off of him?
I was a summer intern for 2 summers, 1972 and 1973. And so, as I said, I stayed away from the whole thing. I didn't really discuss it that much. I stayed away from the thing until, it wasn't until after 2003, 2004 that, well, I want to put everything to kind of together, at least make a magazine article out of it or something like that. But I do want to mention also, too, is that all of this is talked in detail at My God, I'm Hit. That's what we talked about before. So if you go over to the website, mygodhit.com, mygodiamhit.com. There's a video at the top of myself, and then there's also right below that, as Mark and I were on a podcast, and it gives you a lot of the details and that type of thing. At the bottom of it also is an article I did on A.J. Phillips, and he guarded the home of Bruce Payne, and absolutely one of the most craziest things, stories you can hear, that he ended up guarding the home, and I have a whole article about that. So, the whole thing about is that when they made that turn onto Elm Street, what Mark and I feel that we've done is we zeroed in on three of the most closest first eyewitnesses when the first shot fired. That's what we then really zeroed in on as those first three witnesses. And so I'll let you take it from there, Mark.
Yeah, what I meant was if you had bounced that off of Bob Jackson down the road.
Oh, yeah, Bob Jackson, no, because I really wasn't into any of that. Oddly enough, so it was my second summer internship. We got a phone call, I thought it was the city desk that was calling in. So we need somebody at 411 Elm Street. Well, I didn't know what 411 Elm Street meant. So I just rushed over to 411 Elm Street, and there was a motion picture company that was doing a tour, and this was now 1973, so there was still no museum or anything else of the sort. And I ended up where I took pictures all inside. I actually had a telephoto lens going out of the sixth floor window. I did it all in color. They handed me color photograph. You know, I just was hired just as a hired gun, and took color slides, and then just gave them the film. They gave me $300 cash. And that's my one thing about now the school book depository is I actually had a telephoto lens shooting out of the sixth floor museum window.
Where the Carcano,
supposedly,
but in reality, a German Mauser took right. The one shot at his shoulder.
Right.
Yeah, well, I meant when you saw Bob Jackson back like 2010, whether he ever.
Oh, no, I did not. No.
Okay, anyway, yes. So the first shot is fired. The limo's rolling down the street, approximately 10, if not less, miles an hour. And Kennedy reaches for his shoulder. Kellerman, the Secret Service agent in the front passenger seat, hears him yell, "My God, I'm hit." And that's then we have June.
That is 12 o'clock position.
Yeah, he's the 12 o'clock position. And then Gene Hill and Mary Mormon are in the 9 o'clock position.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And the 6 o'clock position would have been June DeShong, who kept the diary. No,
she would be at the 3 o'clock or
three o'clock position.
And Bennett is at the 6 o'clock position. So we have literally coverage on all three. And then Mary Mormon.
Yeah.
So we have this literally, if you then talk to those eyewitnesses on the first and you look at their testimony, the first shot fired, what happened and what did those people say of those closest eyewitnesses. And that's when you get now a whole different type of scenario. That's when everything goes sideways as far as the official narrative. We have Bennett, and this is again, we have discovered this through a Secret Service paper that Mark discovered and that existed. I bought it, then you went through it, and we found this great exhibit. And we're already going to...
Yeah, hold that. No, we got... Hold that as the clip. No, this is the last set of ads of the show, and yeah. I'll pick that up. That's a very important point. We'll be right back.
A simple smile, such platonic eye, how they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them all when the fear it calls, how we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because
you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Did you know that you can be tracked and traced when you're online? With identity theft and cybercrimes on the rise, your passwords, your identity, and even your physical location can be revealed to complete strangers. Would you like to surf the internet anonymously and not have to worry about these threats? Well, now you can by visiting patriotinternet.com. For about $2 per month, patriotinternet.com will conceal your IP address and your physical location, allowing you to browse the web, send emails, and instant message anonymously. Patriotinternet.com will bypass filters, block sites, and keyword blocking. You can also bypass logging by your router and your ISP. With patriotinternet.com, there is no software to install and uses 128-bit encryption for your protection. When using wireless hotspots, patriotinternet.com shields your information from identity thieves and is compatible with Windows, Mac, and Linux. Protect your identity and your freedom with anonymous internet access from patriotinternet.com. Visit patriotinternet.com today.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
And welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses here today on the significant date, November 22nd, 2021. I'm talking to Brian David Anderson, the main author and producer of the documentary My God, I'm Hit, and an associated book, My God, I'm Hit, A Sherlock Holmes Approach to the Incident on Elm Street, the JFK incident, that is, and that's My God, I'm Hit, I am, with no apostrophe, mygodimhit.com. to actually see the documentary and read some literature and various postings and learn all about it. My God, I'm Hit, I am, no apostrophe, .com. At any rate, Brian, we were getting into the scenario on Elm Street. I'm going to ask the engineer to post photo number 2, which shows the JFK limo at some distance with him reaching for his throat. Let's see if we can get that still frame up while I'm talking. At any rate, so the car is going down the street. We have Kellerman at 12 o'clock, the Secret Service agent, in the front passenger seat. June DeShong, a local woman, at the 3 o'clock position. A Secret Service agent, Glenn Bennett, in the car that Johnson was in. The Queen Mary, right behind JFK's limo, and then Gene Hill, Mary Mormon at the 9 o'clock position. That's the one right there. And so we're looking at this photo. Now, if we can blow that up as much as possible, enlarge that as much as we're able to today. But this is where the powers that be really did their meddling. JFK was actually shot in the shoulder. No one, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, no one actually that day saw JFK reach for his throat.
Exactly. And
June DeShong wrote in her diary, and she was right there, his arm slipped off the side of the car, that'd be his right arm, and he slumped in his seat. He did not reach for his throat, but lo and behold, we have this frame that we're looking at here of JFK inexplicably doing what no one saw him do at that moment. After the first shot was fired, he was hit in the shoulder and said, "My God, I'm hit." But the powers that be tell us that that bullet went through his trachea area and did the magic winding through the air, which bullets don't do, and ended up hitting Connally, at that time the Texas governor, a future Treasury Secretary of the U.S., ended up hitting him in multiple places and wounding him. So what the powers that be wanted to create here was a fake scenario of a bullet going through Kennedy's neck area, through where the larynx is, and being that magic bullet and hitting Connally. But what actually happened here, and I don't know if we can enlarge this picture a little bit more, was we know from very, very reliable sources that this Zapruder film was doctored at Hawkeye Works in Rochester, New York, a CIA lab there. And the original film was seen by one of the best photo experts of that time, Dino Brugioni. And that's sufficient if we can't get any larger on that photo. But Dino Brugioni and also Doug Horn of the Assassinations Review Board, who I met at a conference in Virginia in September of 2014, he also corroborated not only were frames taken out of the Z film, Zapruder film, but there was actual animation and other alterations put in there. He's the one that revealed Hawkeye Works to me, because he interviewed Dino Brugioni, the Naval/CIA photo expert, before I did. He did it in person. I talked to Dino a little while before he passed away over the phone. But what we're looking at here, ladies and gentlemen, is arms that were drawn onto JFK's image. It's an animation to make it look like a bullet had taken that path, when in fact he was only shot in the shoulder. And Glenn Bennett, and I'll pick up where we left off. Glenn Bennett was the Secret Service agent, normally a pencil pusher. He was put out in the field that day, so he had a little bit different mindset. He's just sitting in the Queen Mary right behind JFK, and he said, "I saw my boss get shot 4 inches below the right shoulder." You know, the top of your shoulder is right here, where your shoulder, the top of your body is, you know, the actual top of your shoulder. And that was an exact quote in a compilation of Secret Service agent testimony that was put together and released through the Johnson Museum, the LBJ Museum in Austin. I learned about it, Brian, you recall, when Robert Caro, a researcher, was on TV in 2012. I was covering Bilderberg, and he referred to this Secret Service agent's testimony book being put together. I told you, you got a hold of it, and with our astonishment, we read where Glenn Bennett corroborated June DeShong, Gene Hill, and Mary Mormon and Kellerman. None of them contradicted each other, in other words. And so we have this round-the-clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock set of witnesses, only seeing Kennedy get shot in the shoulder, only slumping in his seat, not reaching for his throat like the doctored film showed. So he was only shot in the shoulder, so then right there we have a big lie, and they're trying to create a false scenario for this so-called magic bullet in order to concoct a larger mythology that they would then foist upon the people, as you indicated, by repeating the doctored and altered Z film, by repeatedly showing that. It debuted in America, I believe, via Geraldo Rivero in the early 70s in terms of the general public. But before that, they showed it to Dr. Baxter. They showed it to Dan Rather very early on, once it was doctored. And they would use it as a propaganda weapon to drum into people's heads that this incident on that day was assassination by rifle fire. But now I'll come clean on what we're talking about here. This day, 58 years ago, was not assassination by rifle fire. In fact, it was not assassination at all. This is the false scenario, ladies and gentlemen. JFK lived to tell another. He lived another day. In fact, he lived significantly longer. He did not die that day. Our evidence, to the best of our ability, points that direction. It's beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the standard that's sought and agreed upon for our courts of law. Beyond a reasonable doubt, according to the best evidence, and we gathered it very carefully in this eyewitness fashion and other attendant evidence. He did not die that day through rifle fire or any other means, and it was a staged fake shooting, and you call it, Brian, fake assassination by abdication.
Yeah, abdication by fake assassination.
Right.
And again, we have now the 6, 3, and 12 o'clock positions, and they all corroborate one another. And then now you put this with the jacket photo from the FBI, their evidence, Warren Commission Exhibit 303. And what's very interesting now is that we've been doing this, as I said, in 2007, and then we found the Bennett material, what, about 2014? But that's been about 5 years now. And there's been a evolvement here. But now when we present this information, this whole segment that we've just now presented, is if you were to go up to any other type of JFK investigators, you go up on the other forums, that type of thing, which are done, and they basically just shut down. They have no reply. There's nothing you can really say to try to counter what these three, especially the three, I feel, the critical eyewitnesses, because they're on his side of the car, are Bennett, Dishong, and Kellerman. And when you present that evidence to a lot of these, quote, JFK investigators, they just go blank. They don't try to do any type of counter to this whatsoever. Nobody's even attempted, nevertheless, done something to counter this big block of evidence. And then you put the FBI Exhibit 303, Warren Commission 303, with the jacket. You've got a real compelling type of evidence. I think this would even stand up in court. As far as what happened on that first shot went into his shoulder.
Right, and it was done with a German Mauser, because even though you can't trust the mass media cartel, now we're going to get into quick bullet points. You can't trust the mass media cartel, but things were more tightly controlled then. And they right away, they said, three shots were fired on the streets of Dallas. They had no way of knowing there were three shots fired that soon. No way. I cannot be more emphatic. And then they did admit, because one thing you can be sure of is usually the first report, if there's anything true at all, the first report is going to be the closest to the truth. And the first reports were they found a German Mauser, a vastly more accurate rifle than the Italian Mannlicher Carcano, that all of a sudden just popped out of nowhere. When they wanted to get Dallas County Sheriff at that time, Roger Craig, they wanted him and Seymour Wiseman and some of his associates out of the way, because they had seen things and they had some insights that the powers that be did not want published or to be disseminated. And that included the fact that they found that Mauser. And so that would have been the rifle, in your estimation, and I agree, that would have been used only to give JFK a cautionary poke in the shoulder. Nothing fatal. They concocted the reaching for the throat thing by doctoring the film with a animation-like alteration. So then, of course, people are going to say, oh, but what about the gaping head wound that we all saw, much to our horror? That was the fatal shot, correct? Well, let me just share a little something. I went to the McAllen, Texas Library about 2010 or 11. And that was when we were looking at the fact that Life Magazine, the big photographic magazine in those days, they were very heavily into photographs. They had two photos of the same moment in time, frame 313. And one was a spray of blood, and one was just like a head blob with no spray. And they were the exact same photos, the exact same instant in time, in the same edition of a Life Magazine. But what's interesting, and we can, there's a photo, of that, right? Go up. It could be that one. That's fine.
That's 313. It is, yeah.
Yeah, there's 313. Now that, we'll ask to move that square over to the left a little more. I don't know what that is. That black square.
The black square needs to go off to the left, because that's very important. The black square needs to go to the left.
let's move that black square a little further. All the way over.
To the left.
To the left. Okay, we don't want that. We want frame 313. Yeah. But that black blank square, we need to get that out of the way.
Very important.
What, this thing here?
Yes. Yeah, to the left.
Yeah, there we go. Now we're only going to look at frame 313. Now, there's three versions of it here, right next to each other. This one, what we're seeing here is the Warren Commission told us that the bullet entered roughly the back of his head from the direction of the school book depository and blew open his skull. But this is one of the photos of frame 313, among others, the versions of it, where you can clearly see that at the point of so-called impact, his head remained perfectly intact. The part that the Warren Commission said was hit, the back of the head from the book depository, is and remain intact.
All the segments, all frames, it remains intact.
Right. Now, let's go to the very next version of 313 that's right next to that. That one right there. Now, here it's very important. You'll see, ladies and gentlemen, no matter how they tried scrubbing it out, they tried soaking it out, no matter how many frames they removed, no matter what they tried doing, they could not get rid of the fact that you can see an upward, slightly angular, but upward streak going from Kennedy and then up in the air. And that's because what Brian and I determined beyond a reasonable doubt was that this was not a fatal head wound, but rather the detonation of an incendiary device that evidently Jackie, who was apparently in on this, set off or helped set off in some way. It could have been remote controlled, and maybe she only had to hold it in position. But it went off and it shot straight in the air, or almost straight in the air. Now, that means there's no bullet path coming from the grassy knoll from right to left. There's no bullet path coming from the depository from left to right. The back of his head is intact, completely contradicting the official story. You might say, well, it looks like they got the front of his head. However, we have this upward streak here. And when Dino Brugioni saw the Z film in Washington the weekend after the Friday, November 22nd so-called assassination, he saw it before the film went to Hawkeye Works. And this is according to Doug Horn of the Assassinations Review Board. Before it went to Hawkeye Works, the reported CIA lab at Eastman Kodak in Rochester, New York, and he saw, so therefore, the completely undoctored Z film, and said that he had not heard much about what happened to JFK. He didn't have any predispositions or preconceptions in his mind. He did not see the doctored film because it hadn't been doctored yet. So he was uncorrupted in his assessment of what he saw. And he said to me over the phone, and he told Doug Horn of the review board, that a pinkish, orangish streak went straight up, and it really caught his eye that nothing went from left to right or from right to left. And even Oliver Stone, Brian, and you can take it from there, when he made the JFK movie starring Kevin Costner, they used a pyrotechnics Hollywood device to simulate a fatal head wound, what would look like a fatal head wound. But what we're saying in My God, I'm Hit is that they actually used the device, in other words, life imitated art, on the streets that day, November 22nd, 1963. What people thought was a fatal head wound was a non-fatal, probably loud and probably very dramatic looking, but a non-fatal incendiary device. And again, you can still see the streak going up at a slight angle. No matter how much they doctored it, they couldn't get that out of there.
And the very good point here is that now the splatter, if he had been hitting from the back, had the bullet come in from the back of the head, Jackie should have been absolutely soaked in blood, and she wasn't. And also then you can see that little bright white little thing. That's Nell Conley. You see the midpoint there? She should have been soaked also. There should have been an absolute 100% soak of both of those, and also the Governor Connally also. They weren't. All of this debris went directly up in the air. Nell Connally said it felt like then that she was rained on by a buckshot. And Roy Kellerman said that there was this sawdust material that fell on his jacket. And then the driver of the Secret Service car behind, he said that also this debris fell on him. So this was an explosion, a pyrotechnics device, went straight up into the air and then rained down upon all the people that were in the car. That's not a bullet. That's a pyrotechnics explosion.
Correct. And there is that rather strange YouTube video that was cryptically put up by someone that we later suspected to be now the late Gary Mack, the former head of the Sixth Floor Museum, which is the former school depository building on Elm Street there in Dallas. And we suspected that he may have put that up there, but that video showed what looked like JFK sitting back up after he had initially slumped in his seat, never reached for his throat, and sitting back up. Now, it was a little bit ambiguous. You couldn't get a real good view, but it was a sufficient view to give a very strong impression that he sat back up. At any rate, what happened then, and again, if you go to My God, I'm Hit, with I am being just the letters I am, no apostrophe, mygodimhit.com, you can find the entire 1 hour, 45-minute documentary on this to get all the details filled in. If you have any trouble, get a hold of me through the station or email me at truthhound2@yahoo.com, and I'll get you the right links. But at any rate, so, Brian, let's now go to the next frame 313 with a slightly different color hue, this one. Now, look at this one, Brian, going to the next one, not that one, the other one, the other way.
Yeah.
This one here. This one, yeah. Somebody did a little artist touch-up, and they actually took some orange of some kind, and they traced where the line goes up. I found this last night. Mm. And they did it, obviously, to accent that upward path of the projectile. And in this one, you can see even more clearly, in addition to that, that JFK's head, for all intents and purposes, appears to have remained intact all along.
Yeah.
And that
he has an explosion by the side of his head.
Right. It's a separate event. That's the thing. It's a separate event. The glow next to his head does not prove by any stretch that that is blood or tissue coming out of his head. It's
and also, too, is that Jackie was sitting to his left. And Jackie is left-handed, so she could then, that was a thing where she could hold some sort of pyrotechnics device on JFK's right shoulder.
Yes. Now, I know a lot of people would say, well, how could Jackie, sweet Jackie, pure as the driven snow, do this? Well, if you read up on Jackie, she was not pure as the driven snow. She was a complicated figure. Her and JFK were estranged most of the time. She would take long trips away from him prior to this day in Dallas. Clint Hill, the only living person who was in that car that day, once these events unfolded and it rode to Parkland Hospital quite a bit slower than you would think it would have gone, about 70 miles an hour, he's the only living person that was in that car that day. He was her guard, and he would accompany her on long overseas trips. It's very likely she had affairs. JFK, of course, up to a certain point, had affairs. We believe he had an epiphany and became a much more dedicated leader of the American Republic and began to pull away from the powers that be. And that's why they gave him this deal with the devil. And that's what you've always said, Brian. There's so many ways we could go with this, but you don't believe that they would, at least in a knee-jerk fashion, kill one of their own elite members, and they would at least give a fellow elite member a chance to live if he agreed to a bargain or some sort of deal with the devil. And that's what we believe happened, that Jackie was enlisted to help Jack abdicate, but go out looking like he was assassinated in order to be a martyr and be that kind of hero that martyrs can be. And that gives the nation, almost like the moon landing, that gives them something they can wrap their brain around. well, it's sad, it's tragic, they took our king, but at least he was a martyr, and he went out, he was going to take us out of Vietnam, he was our hero in some respects. And so it gave the powers that be the perfect cover for the abdication. Maybe you'd want to comment there.
And again, Brian, now, after this occurred, now the whole thing would be there has to be a body switch. And that limousine was large enough to do that. But again, I don't know if we're going to have how much time to go into details, but the My God, I'm Hit website goes into details of, and it's, I think, very, very compelling evidence that, yes, there was a body switch.
Yes, yes. And that comes around, ladies and gentlemen. We're running out of time, maybe in 3 minutes. It's hard to do this one in an hour, but it comes around to the secret compartment I mentioned, why we think that the final alterations were made to the 100X presidential limo, and that's why they used a different white Lincoln car on the prior visits to Houston, San Antonio, and Fort Worth prior to bringing out the black 100X that we're all familiar with on November 22nd in Dallas. And this secret compartment was used to take someone else, a lookalike generally of Kennedy, and to keep him in the trunk, and to exert some wounds on him that would be the right kind of wounds for the story that was being peddled upon us, and that the real JFK went into the secret compartment. They took the lookalike out of this compartment. That's who went in trauma room one of Parkland Hospital, and they put the oxygen mask on him and began to operate him on him right away. They didn't take a real good look at this person in trauma room one, and that person would have been a stand-in or look-alike for JFK, and that is how they pulled it off.
And then the person, also the victim in the trunk, was shot in the throat and in the head front. And we also give suspects of who actually was the shooter. We don't really maybe know. We always call this person the switchman, which is the victim, and then we also have the shooter. So the shooter to the throat and to the front, and everything that's been said at Parkland Hospital corroborates that scenario of being shot in the front and bullets going out of the back.
And we'll have to leave it off there, Brian. Check out My God, I'm Hit. I am no apostrophe. MyGodI'mHit.com, ladies and gentlemen. Read about the part, especially learn about the part about Dr. McClellan and his garment where it was stained with JFK's blood. The significance of that is exactly whose blood was that really on his garment. And we've always asked that blood should be tested versus the known DNA makeup of JFK's blood. Compare the blood on that garment to JFK's blood. Will they match? That's the key question. Thanks for listening.
And
maybe they will not. Probably they will not. He says they will not. Anyway. We'll try and cover this another time here before the year ends and get the second half of this. 1 hour is not enough. Thanks for listening. Stay for the next show on RBN and MyGodI'mHit.com. Check it out. If you can't find it, get a hold of me. Have a great day. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.